Hi everybody, I'm John Offord. I'm a broadcaster based in the UK and welcome to Different Minds, a podcast series that looks at neurodiversity, the different ways our brains can work and interpret information. Today we're going to talk about bipolar disorder and we're going to be joined by a very special guest. April Kelly is a multi-award winning actress and producer and joins me now. Hi there, April.
Hello. Hi. Thank you for having me.
No worries. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. The sun is shining. Hard to complain when that's probably one of the little joys that we can have at the moment.
So April, just tell us a little bit more about yourself, whereabouts you're based, and a little bit more about what you do for a living.
Yeah, so I mean, thank you for the lovely introduction. So I'm London based, although I have gone back to my parents in Hertfordshire for lockdown, mainly because I have a dog and two cats. So that's been really lovely. And yes, so I am an actor and a producer. So when I'm not acting, I'm producing with my business partner, and we own the company Mini Productions. And I just feel very grateful and fortunate for what I get to do. I think it's a privilege to be in this industry. And yes, since last year, I've become the ambassador for Bipolar UK, which has been very humbling and awe-inspiring, to be honest.
So just tell us a bit more about the work you've done as an actress.
Yeah, so I've had a funny journey into acting. I went to drama school, as most of us do. So I did a year at Arts Ed, then I went on to Aura for 3 years, and I came out not with a UK agent but with a US agent. So that was really interesting because I also now have my visa to go and live and work in the States. As you can imagine, I haven't managed to get over there this year, which is really sad. But in terms of my personal career, it's mainly on screen and it's mainly in the indie world. I've done a couple of bits and bobs in mainstream TV, but I'm kind of carving out a bit of a different career than what potentially your run-of-the-mill, that's awful to say, isn't it? One of them, the more traditional routes of going down acting. So I've been in, and then I've also subsequently produced and been in films that have just hit the festival circuit. One film I did, which is called Treacle, which essentially is a buddy film at heart, but actually addresses the issues of bisexuality and bi-erasure. And we shot that in LA, and we kind of couldn't believe the response. Bisexuality is so underrepresented on screen, and I'm sure we'll get to how little bipolar disorder is represented as well. And that film has gone on to screen 50 festivals worldwide. It's qualified for BAFTAs and Oscars and premiered at BFI London Flair, so BFI's LGBTQ+ festival.
Really interesting. So does a lot of your work then in terms of acting linking with mental health, would you say?
I've only just touched on it. So my journey of mental health started when I was 15, and I only ever started to publicly speak about it last March when Happerful magazine, an amazing mental health magazine, gave me a platform to write a letter to my younger self. And I'd only just been diagnosed with bipolar, and I finally knew what the demon was that I was fighting. And then so off the back of that and being public and working with Bipolar UK, I realized that there's not really a voice out there for this. So my next two pieces are very much mental health driven, but I wouldn't want to pigeonhole myself in that department.
Yeah. That makes sense. And just tell us a bit more, if you're able to, about your bipolar diagnosis last year then. I mean, how that must have been a momentous thing for you.
Yeah, it was. I always say it was like a weight was lifted and loaded on all at the same time. I'd been misdiagnosed for nearly a decade, been on every medication you can possibly imagine. And when I finally got the diagnosis, I was like, oh my God, everything makes sense now. Everything makes sense. And then I thought I started to deal with it quite well, but I evidently didn't. Looking back on it, I was actually quite unwell for a year after receiving the diagnosis. And then it wasn't until I became the ambassador and I really thought I can't do all of this by myself? Because, you know, if you've been suffering for a long time, whether you're undiagnosed or diagnosed, I thought from the age of 15 that this was just growing pains. This was just what puberty was about. So I thought, it's fine, I can deal with it all by myself. And it wasn't really until last year that I went, nah, I can't do this. I need a village to help me here.
I just wondered what your thoughts were around labels when it comes to mental health.
Yeah, it's a funny old one, because I always say, if you put me in a room in front of a loved one, you really struggle to open me up. I can't do it. I find it really embarrassing. I think when you live with bipolar and there are these two or multiple versions of yourself, it's hard. It's hard to accept that when someone you love is sitting in front of you. Whereas what I found solace in has been speaking publicly and doing these live streams and writing these articles and speaking at these events. It's cathartic for me, because it's hard. When I get a chance to put something in an article, I can think about it, articulate it really well, and then put that in front of my loved ones, hoping that they'll read between the lines. But in terms of the discrimination, I'm quite naive in all my life. I didn't realise the level of discrimination there was until the last few months. The more and more I work with Bipolar UK, and I may have just brushed over particular discriminations, and I look back on it now and I go, oh no, that was really poor. And I then think about, if I had to work for someone else, I don't think I could hold a job down. I'm very lucky to run my own production company, and you know, when you're acting on your own, and I'm very fortunate to have the business partner that I have, because you sometimes don't get to dictate your schedule. Your mental health has to do that sometimes. In terms of representation and discrimination within the entertainment industry, we've got a long way to go. I mean, disability as a whole is really lacking. Something that Sarah and my business partner and I fight against quite a lot, because you go into some auditions and they want you to disclose your whether you have any illnesses, but also sometimes specifically your mental illness. And I think that's incredibly unfair, because when I tell someone I'm living with bipolar, they're either super, super cool about it, or it's like you've just told them that you're Jekyll and Hyde, and the fear in their eyes completely swells. I think one of the biggest things for me, which we need to work on in the industry, is to understand, should someone have a mental illness, instead of ignoring it, you need to, like anyone else with a different kind of illness, even if it's from physical disability or even diabetes, you need to inform them so that they can help you on the job. So for example, when I was acting in one of my films, the director knew I was better after midday because my medication, like I said to you, John, I was like, can we make it a bit later? Because my medication makes me really groggy. And she knew. So we made sure the schedule started a bit later in the day.
Makes sense. And just tell us a bit more about what it is like to live with bipolar disorder.
It's a cross between, well, I'd say it's a surprise party at a theme park. So you don't really know what you're going to turn up to or who you're going to turn up to. But you know, you're in for a ride. And it is, now I know what it is, I can somewhat second guess it. Bipolar disorder, if you look it up, they describe it as extreme episodes of highs, manic highs, and really low depressed episodes. And these can last any length of time. So I'm bipolar type 2, which means I'm more prone to have lower episodes. And bipolar type 1 is when you can go into like hypermania. And I have a friend who has type 1, and she'll be fine for years. And then all of a sudden, she'll go into a manic episode for 3-4 months, and you just kind of lose her. Whereas me, I'm more undulating That's a new word I've learned recently. I'm really feeling it. I'm like, cool, I'm going to use this. Because I also have borderline personality disorder mixed in, and they're like best friends. So my mood, I never know what I'm going to wake up to, and I never know what I'm going to go to bed with. So I kind of say it's like arriving at a theme park to a surprise party. You don't know what's going to be there, who's going to be there, but you know you're going to be in for a ride.
So just tell us a bit more about borderline personality disorder, if you're able to.
When I got diagnosed with bipolar disorder, I was forewarned that I had traits of borderline personality disorder, but it only really came to the surface properly at the back end of last year. And as you might be aware, bipolar can be treated with medication. I've recently learned that bipolar is 70% genetic and 30% triggered by trauma. Borderline personality disorder can't be treated per se by medication. Psychotherapy is the best way to learn to manage it. So borderline personality disorder is the thing that really affects your relationships. It's like this significant, overwhelming feeling of attachment, and therefore you become attached to anyone or anything, and you become dependent on them, and this fear of rejection. So as you can imagine, it's pretty much a nightmare, because with both bipolar disorder and borderline, I say it's knowing you're so fiercely loved but loathe yourself. And it's this blessing of being able to feel every emotion so deeply that you need to sleep 14 hours a day because you're exhausted. I can sit here in a good frame of mind this morning and I can see it as a blessing to have that level of empathy. But my God, does it play tricks on your head?
How does living with bipolar disorder affect your relationship with family and friends?
When you've started showing signs of not being stable from the age of 15, and now I'm 29 and we now know what we're dealing with, you've got that whole period in your late teens and early 20s where it can be deemed you're being a shitty teenager. You are just that kind of person. And when I can't understand it or articulate it, then how are my family supposed to know? So I think they've always been really good. And I always say this, that when I was diagnosed, the first thing my dad said above anything else was, I always knew there was a spark of genius in you. And once we could pinpoint it, like I said, all of the things started to make sense for both my family and myself. And they went away and educated themselves for a year. We all read articles, we all listened to whatever was available, which wasn't much. And then finally, I don't know if you've seen it or any of your listeners have heard of it, but Modern Love on Amazon Prime. The third episode has Anne Hathaway in, and she plays a woman who's navigating the dating world with having bipolar. And I watched it, and it broke me. I said this is what I can put in front of someone and go, this is what you don't see when the door shuts behind you. And that has been the best teaching tool for my family, my friends, my dating life, you know, put that in front of them. My friends also really, really good, but because, you know, you make different friends at different times in your life. And when they found out about the diagnosis, because I very much only told maybe about 5 people, and then I waited a long time and actually came out publicly with this published letter as a way to not have to send a group WhatsApp text to everyone saying, hi, I'm bipolar. Doesn't that explain a lot? But for my friends as well, it was the penny dropped. And over the course of especially last year, which was rough, and then into this year, they've equipped themselves with the tools. So they all kind of know what their role is. And Sarah is the puppeteer, so she knows me the best. And then she'll go to one of my friends and go, she isn't eating. Can you just go around and cook her dinner? Just stuff like that. So I am so, so fortunate, because the worst person I have in my life is me, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. So when you talked about dating before, I mean, is that challenging sometimes, or how do you approach that? Are you quite open in sort of mentioning your diagnosis early on in dating, or how do you navigate that?
I'm not gonna lie, John, not very well. Especially when you're bisexual as well. It's just like, oh God. Right. I always hid it. And I couldn't hide it anymore when I was dating someone, and whilst we were dating, I became the ambassador of my own mental illness. And I was like, probably best if I tell them before it goes public. And it's really difficult and scary for me, because although I'm very emotionally mature in terms of empathy and understanding, I'm not very emotionally mature when it comes to relationships, because of the borderline, because of the attachment issues. And I'm very much a puppy, is what I get called. I'm a puppy. And I sometimes say that, look, I'll be the love of your life for 3 weeks, and if we go past that, we're both in trouble. It's hard. It is really hard, because I've come off the apps. The apps were really triggering for me. I thought this is a perfect time to date 6 people in a week rather than just not do that, because it's expensive. and I'm still very much learning. I've learned it's going to take a very, despite being bisexual and I've got the whole world to pick from, it's going to be a very small pool of people who will be able to love and manage me like I need. And it's not massive. Like, it's not a huge ask. It is just a bit different. I am just wired a bit differently.
It sounds like you've turned a big corner in your life, though, in terms of the diagnosis and your self-awareness of your own mental health condition, and, you know, the fact you are an ambassador with Bipolar UK. You are embracing your differences and using your creativity in your career to express yourself. So it feels like, you know, from an outside point of view, you are seeing the positives out of this as well.
Yeah, definitely. I would say I'm very good at hiding it. That's what I get told. I get told, wow, I'd have no idea. And I'm like, good. I've been acting since I've been ill since 15, and you know, and I did go to drama school, so I can kind of hold a different character. But the reason why I have to be so vocal without, you know, I don't like to be on my soapbox all the time, is because at the age of 15, when I was scrolling through the internet, trying to find out what the hell was going on in my head, what kind of illness was it? I thought it was something wrong with my stomach, but that was just where all of the anxiety went. And I just thought, if I can help one 15-year-old out there who is scared of their own mind, then that gives me reason to get out of bed every morning. And it's to have that purpose. So if I can get out of bed in the morning and make someone else get out of bed and smile and not feel alone, then yes, I will happily talk about it publicly.
Absolutely. And you mentioned earlier about the letter that you wrote to your younger self. What were some of the points that you were kind of raised there in terms of looking back at your life?
So I wrote it to my 18-year-old self, and that would be that arguably would be the most triggering year of my life. And this is the thing, I come across very open and candid, which I am. But for me, it's still just the tip of the iceberg. And I don't think I don't know if I'll ever be ready to really share the handful of dark times that have probably led me here. But in the letter, I touch on it a little bit. I like to, self-deprecation is my favourite thing. So it's a lot of older me taking the piss out of younger me. And a couple of the moments that I say is, I say to my younger self, I also know you're scared and you don't know why. And you have two continuous thoughts swimming around in your head. One of them is, what the hell is that feeling in the pit of my stomach? No one warned me about this. And why can't I choose whether I want to be of a boy or girl? And I don't have answers for the first question, but then it's highlighting that bisexuality is also a thing. I say I'm the mighty bye-byes. It's very annoying, but there's a lot of correlation between bisexuality and mental health. And I spent more nights awake wondering if I was gay or straight before finding out about bisexuality. So I talk about that, and then I mention when I finally get the diagnosis, and I'll call my mum. So I call my mum on the way home, and she just broke down, because, you know, when it's your parents, they see something wrong with their child and they fix it. And for the first time ever, they looked at me and was like, we don't know how to fix it. So all they can do is go, right, can you explain how it feels? And then, especially me and my dad, we pretty much communicate in metaphors. Mm. So I always tell him, it's like sucking a slushy too fast and you get brain freeze. You just have to hold tight and wait for it to pass.
And April, I just wanted to ask you a bit more about the stigma again. I know we talked about that earlier, but sometimes people, I've certainly heard people say that, oh, you know, bipolar disorder, it's just we all have, you know, ups and downs, that it's just an extreme version of that. That's all that bipolar disorder is. You know, and often if you've got friends that, you know, sometimes people go, they misunderstand someone with bipolar disorder and say, well, one minute they want to, you know, hang around with you and they're really enthusiastic, and then the next minute you don't hear from them for weeks and they're dead unreliable and they're not, you know, and they don't, and they kind of judge, you know, sometimes they might judge you and not really, and this is all stemming from not understanding what the condition actually is. I just wondered if you had any experience.
I think it took me until lockdown to really settle into it. I think for so long I've used busy London life and career as a mask and as an excuse to why I feel how I feel. And then when that all gets taken away from you and you find yourself with more time on your hands, I really confess to myself that I am mentally ill. And then I managed to find a better way of articulating the kind of support I need. Because you're quite right, everyone has an opinion, everyone has their version of what they think bipolar is. It annoys me when you go through Twitter, because when I can't sleep at night, I like to search bipolar just to see if anything news come out, or that's how I found out about Modern Love. And the amount of people that say the weather's being bipolar or their hair's being bipolar today, I'm like, oh, stop it. But what I did find, I've got a couple of pet peeves. It's going to sound awful. I don't like the phrase, it's okay to not be okay. That does my head in. Yeah. I think it's a bit of a cop out, to be honest. But what I say is, it is like living each day on a tightrope. You know, I'm begging my mind not to slip off either side. And I can share all these feelings. I actually did a video for it for Mental Health Week, which is probably the most honest I've been publicly. And, you know, a lot of what people say when they're living with bipolar are universal feelings. And because the amount of time I've called friends and they're like, oh, yeah, no, I feel like that. No, it's normal to feel like that. And I'm like, I get it. I'm certainly not going to tell you you're wrong or you don't know what it feels like. But can you not say to me that it's normal to feel the way I feel? Because these universal feelings aren't in a subdued way that like they might be in your head. They're overwhelmingly consuming and they're damaging, and they can be life threatening, really.
If you could tell us a bit more about the work that you do with, you know, Bipolar UK.
I always write bits and bobs for them, and I write for Happiful magazine as well, so it's all interlinked. And at the start of lockdown, we started doing Wednesdays with April. So I jump on Facebook, we pick a topic, and now I get to chat to my friends for half an hour each week. And it's so wonderful to have the community come together. And that really doesn't make you feel alone. There's a lot of people who just get it, you know, who aren't trying to understand it because they get it, they're in it. I do some talks for them whenever we're able to have a live event, but it keeps building as a media ambassador for them. I'm always trying to think of ways to get more messages out there, and there is a lot of messaging when it comes to the academic side and the medical side of things, but we need to find a way to present that information in a more palatable way so that people living with bipolar, or more importantly friends and family, can understand it. Because I think that's one of the biggest issues we're finding with discrimination and stigma. You can educate someone with bipolar all you like. They will be there, willing and ready to listen. But until friends and families understand it more, the discrimination and the stigma will continue.
In terms of like mental health provision in the UK, what would you say that's like?
It's definitely gotten better. I don't think we're anywhere near where we should be, but where should we be? I'm not entirely sure until I know or see more of it. When I was younger, it was so not understood. So when I first went into the GP, which I can't remember actually happening now, all I knew is they just put me straight on antidepressants there and then. I was in the GP. Next day, I had a prescription of antidepressants. There was no guidance, no real understanding of it, and then kept taking those medications, then decided as a 20-year-old, I didn't want to do this anymore. I'm taking myself off of them. They were numbing me. I felt like a robot. So I took myself off of them straight away. Of course, that causes issues because you've gone cold turkey. And then I thought, oh, well, maybe I should try the therapy and the CBT thing. Again, I was just so angsty against it all. And I struggled with being on the NHS conveyor belt when it comes to mental health. I adore the NHS, haven't got a bad word to say about them. It's just my own experience with it. And then when things got really bad, the waiting list was 18 months. And I just thought, thank God I've got good people around me, because 18 months could be the difference between someone being alive and not being alive. So I ended up going to see a psychiatrist privately. And from then on, the help has been incredible, and I'm very fortunate. I'm using my savings to help myself in that way, but that's been amazing, because you've got people that specialize really specifically in something, and I can't speak highly enough. And I love therapy now, never thought I would. I love it.
So you were diagnosed with bipolar disorder last year. What does that actually involve? Does a doctor sit you down and do a test and say you've got bipolar disorder? What actually happens?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. Apologies. I got diagnosed March 2018, and then I came out publicly about it March 2019. Only to say, because I spent a year with my core people educating myself, and then I was like, right, now I need to talk about it. Because I can't talk about it one-on-one. That's what my therapist says. She's like, this isn't a one-woman show. I'm like, no, I'm not going to show you any emotion. But you go and see a psychiatrist, you book in 1 or 2 hours, and they assess you, but not in a way where I was so used to going into counselling sessions or mental health practices, and you have to circle how you're feeling on a scale of 1 to 5 and stuff like that. No, they go through a really methodic way from the moment you're born up until your age. They ask you, because they will have an inkling straight off, so they'll ask you specific questions based off their inkling. And then, I mean, for me, I booked a 2-hour session, 45 minutes in, she was like, you have bipolar disorder. And I was like, oh, cool. What are we going to do for the next hour? So it was quite a quick process for me. It was very apparent.
Maybe there are people listening to this that are struggling with their own mental health or even kind of sexuality. And I wonder if you had any advice for anyone listening that was in a situation like that.
I get asked this question a lot, and I still am yet to find the perfect answer, because I'm always trying to find advice and the perfect answer myself. What I would say in terms of mental health is don't let society and the outside world tell you or change the way you're feeling. Like you, and I say this about sexuality as well. They're both, actually, this works both. The first person you have to come out to or admit to is yourself. So before you can do that, you can't think of doing, can't think of anyone else. So it took me so long to admit that I had a mental illness that I'd go as far to say that I lost my good years. I mean, from the age of 19 to about 24, I didn't have those years. I just shut myself away. I didn't know how to function. And I just wanted to deal with it all by myself. With mental health, specifically bipolar and borderline, there is a lot of shame that comes along with it. And I don't have the answers of how to take that shame away. I just can't recommend enough reaching out for help in whatever way that is. I'm not going to say it's not okay to be okay, because it's not okay to feel how I feel on a daily basis. You telling me it's okay to not be okay does nothing for me. So reach out, educate yourself, and at the end of the day, the shame will only remain there if you don't help yourself. You'll be surprised now, as time goes on, how much is changing for the mental health sector. Is it enough at the moment? No, it's not. But I am so glad that I finally caved in and just, I hit rock bottom and just held my hands up and went, I'll do whatever you want me to do. Just try it. What have I got to lose? If I don't try it, I can't imagine I'm going to be here any longer. So I'm going to try it all. And sexuality, I mean, bi erasure is a massive thing. But again, if you just come out to yourself, that's all you need to do right now. That's all you need to do. And I say as well, you have to be careful with this, because a lot of people deal with it very differently. And I wouldn't recommend doing this if you don't feel like you're in a safe environment during this lockdown. But I took over the Bisexual Resource Centre's Instagram for Bi Visibility Week. And I said, now is probably the best time to embrace your sexuality and open up to some people. And I say that because so much is going on in the world. It's very scary and uncertain, that I promise you, your family is just going to be happy that you're safe and well at the moment. Because in the grand scheme of things, we've got bigger fish to fry than someone's sexuality.
April, thank you so much for chatting to me today. You've been so honest and brave in your you know, discussion with me, and I really appreciate that. And I know this will go a long way to helping others. So really appreciate your time today.
No worries, and the added rambling is just the cherry on the cake for you.
April, can you just remind us, I'm going to put you on the spot here, of the Bipolar UK website for anyone that wants to look for any support?
Of course, it is bipolaruk.org.
Brilliant, thank you. And for anyone wanting to find out more about the creative work that you do, do you have your own website as well?
I do. So you can find me at aprilkelly.com or my production company at miniproductions.co.uk.